And now, a special presentation of Faith Fit Radio with your host, Glenda Meekins.
Welcome to Faith Fit Radio. I'm Glenda Meekins, a writer for the Florida Catholic newspaper and the Diocese of Orlando Communications Office. Joining me today is Dr. Lance Mackey, the president of the Orlando Catholic Physicians Guild. He's calling in from Lake Linden, Michigan, where he works part-time while also living and working in Indy Atlantic. Dr. Mackey is somewhat of a Renaissance man. He is a surfer, retired Air Force pilot. He has performed the Nutcracker as a ballet dancer and even rode a Harley-Davidson as part of the crew on The Long Ride Home, EWTN's motorcycle-based reality TV show. Dr. Mackey, welcome, and thank you for taking the time to be with us today.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
Now, I know that it's been snowing pretty hard over there. What's the temperature like up there in Lake Linden?
Oh, it's about 10 degrees. We've so far gotten over 150 inches of snow this year. I'm originally from Michigan, downstate, but I spent a lot of time in what they call the UP, and people up here are known as Upers. They're pretty tough people. You have to be to live up here. But for me, it's a year of refuge. I don't know how long I'll be here. I have a two-year contract. But today, for example, I went to this beautiful old-fashioned Catholic church that had statues you would never see anymore. And I have the opportunity to daily go to this big church by myself and be with God in the Eucharist for an hour. Just great.
Ah, that's wonderful. That sounds beautiful up there. I know that the snow can get annoying, but you sent me a photo yesterday before as we were planning our interview, and it was just lovely. And what a blessing to be able to have those old churches. So you're an obstetrician and a gynecologist. Tell us a little bit about when you became an OBGYN and why you were drawn to this as your profession.
Sure. Well, I've been married to Christine now 50 years last month.
Congratulations.
And thank you. And she is a saint in the making for sure, if not already there. She was pregnant back in 1970, and I was privileged to see the birth of our first child, Adam. And back then, even though this was progressive California, I had to go to this maternity class with these women who looked at me like I had three heads, and I had to go through all this training to get special permission. I'll never forget, as I walked through the doors into the delivery area, I had an old-fashioned Polaroid camera, and this nurse came up to me and said, "Where do you think you're going with that, mister? You're lucky to be back here. You march back out there. Put that camera away. Don't come back with that camera again." And so I saw my wife give birth, and I just thought it was the greatest thing I'd ever seen. And even though it seemed like something I could never do, I told my wife then, I said, "That's what I want to do." She looked at me with her skeptical eyes and said, "Yeah, right." So I got to do that many, many years later. So that's what started it, actually being in the delivery room, seeing God's miracle of a newborn child. And I just was blown away, and I still am to this day. I enjoy delivering babies.
Now, I know those were the days when the men were not allowed back in the delivery room, and often even women, I guess, they were put out a little bit under, so they could deliver. So a lot has changed since then. Now, the classes you were mentioning, was that the beginning of Lamaze, the Lamaze method?
Yeah, I think so. I don't even remember. I just remember going there and, trying to pay attention. But it was directed at the women. And, again, I felt like I was way out of place. Nobody spoke to me. They weren't very welcoming. But I just, I had to go through it. But it probably was Lamaze. It was 1970. So that was a few years ago.
Yeah. So in an interview I had with you last year, you said Catholic doctors must, quote unquote, evangelize to refresh ethics and teachings of the Catholic Church. You also said that doctors need to behave and act like Catholic doctors in the way they take care of and treat patients. this isn't an easy task as a Catholic. What have been some of the moral conflicts that you've faced while practicing, and what are the common moral conflicts that Catholic doctors face?
I think it's probably a specialty specific, but I know that as an obstetrician, we have kind of a governing board, which is very non-Catholic in its thinking. Their view of birth control is totally opposed to what Humanae Vitae and the Catholic Church promotes. They're very much into controlling the population growth. And so as a resident, we were trained how to do tubal ligations. I was in the military, so I was not forced to do abortions. In fact, I'll never forget our Jewish program director one day asked, well, how many of you people are Catholics? And there were six of us, and we all raised our hand. Yes. And he goes, oh, okay, that's good. He said, how many would you do abortions? And nobody raised their hand. He said, well, how many people would do tubal ligations? We all raised our hand thinking, oh, it's fine. You know, this was back in 88 through 92 when I did my residency. So the thinking among most Catholic doctors trained in the system is birth control is fine. In fact, it's required. We need to do it. And tubal ligations are something that the patient deserves and needs to have. And I had that thinking for the longest time. And thanks to a fellow CMA member, Dr. Helen Kraus, who was the previous Gill president before I took over, questioned me on this a number of years ago. And I just kind of act a little bit stunned, like, well, I don't know. And so I did some reading, and long story short, the more I looked into it, especially when I started to train the Theology of the Body Institute, I realized that I had an obligation to follow the teachings of the Church. And so several years ago, I made a public statement that I would no longer do tubal ligations, that I would no longer prescribe birth control pills. And day-to-day, it's not a big problem. A lot of the other doctors, including Catholic doctors, look at me again like there's something wrong with me. But they kind of go along with it. At least they don't say anything. But I have been fired from many jobs for my stance. In fact, I got the pleasure on January 2nd of getting fired from another hospital in Florida, basically for refusing to do tubal ligations. It's like we offer services. I was working as a hospitalist, and as part of being a hospitalist, they kind of expect that patients will get tubal ligations. It's always been something I've been able to have somebody else do. There are certain circumstances where taking a woman's fallopian tubes off is actually preventative of cancer, but by and large, elective tubal ligations are something I do not do. They wanted me to, and it's cost me at least 3 jobs in the last year or so. So just this week, I lost all my work in Florida for January. You know, it's upsetting, but I know that the two things I've learned are the two T's, trust and thanks. And so I'm in a trustful, thankful mode that things will work out this month.
Wow. Well, let me, and actually I'll have a few other questions, but I'm going to come back to this issue of the tubal ligations. And you mentioned Humanae Vitae and Theology of the Body, both from St. John Paul II. And so tell us a little bit about, you know, briefly, obviously, I know we could do a whole show on Humanae Vitae and the Theology of the Body, but tell us specifically, as to your profession, what spoke to you about those documents that helped convict you and make this decision that obviously has come at great sacrifice?
Well, I think most people kind of look at their own personal lives as, you know, their life's experience and how do we relate our day-to-day living with the teachings of the Church. And as I looked at my family, we had 6 children. And unfortunately, we have lost 2 of the children to an accident and a medical condition. But basically, I remember going in the military to pilot training. And Chris and I, that's my wife, decided that we were expecting our third child, and that was enough. And so I was going to get a, you know, a vasectomy when I was in training. And I asked the doctor, and he looked at me and goes, "You're too young. You're 25, and I'm not going to do it." And I just let it go. And we had our daughter, Carrie, who's our third child. And then shortly thereafter, we lost Adam in a car accident. And so after that, you know, we had three more beautiful children that I would never, ever wish to not have had. So just a personal experience, realizing that without the church teaching that you have to be open to the sanctity of life. And then once I realized the teaching of the church through Humanae Vitae, that it was reaffirmed that we have to be open to the possibility of children in our lives, that you know, sometimes God just he'll speak to you without you really even knowing it. So you do the right thing without the philosophical or theological doctrine to back it up. But once I got that, it's like, wow, I'm sure glad I did what I did. And because it just makes so much sense. And I think the problem is that so many doctors and people in America, in this culture of doubt, they just listen to things that are basically, you know, the theology of self and what matters to you. And it's really not about
relativism.
Secular relativism at its finest. So, certainly when I read Humanae Vitae, and especially when we went to Theology of the Body, we've been through most of the courses, but Theology of the Body 1, that was just so obvious what God is saying through the scriptures, and the TOB is just really gets that message out there.
Now, you had mentioned that you'd had three children after you'd made that decision to not have the vasectomy. I know one of those children was born with Asperger's and has since passed. Did that help form your conviction to honor the sanctity of life? I mean, I know a lot of women are told today, you know, especially if they're over 30, oh, you know, you have this child, they do various tests. I have a good friend who was told that she should terminate her pregnancy because her child was going to be Down syndrome. In fact, she was told that with both of her children. She did not terminate either of those pregnancies, and both of those children ended up perfectly healthy. But even if they hadn't, having a child with Asperger's and special needs, did that in any way firm your conviction to honor that sanctity of life, and if so, how?
Oh, yes. Well, we didn't know what was affecting Mike. He was always a very energetic child, very intelligent, very sports-minded. And as he was growing up, we realized he was a little different. One of the things he didn't do right away was speak, and so we took him to a speech pathologist, and they worked with him. So Mike, as we got into high school years, was really acting out. He was self-medicating with marijuana and Adderall, a stimulant, and he really kind of had a psychotic break, and he just was really difficult, and I took him to a psychiatrist in California who right away declared him to be schizophrenic and put him on some medication. And he calmed and went down, and we were able to live with him. We thought, well, this is great. You know, it's too bad he's got this diagnosis of schizophrenia, but at least now we know what it is, and there's a cure for it, or at least there's a treatment. Many, many years later, through the help of friends and others, we realized that, in fact, he did not have schizophrenia, that he had Asperger's. So I know I kind of ramble with my answers, but basically the fact that we had a beautiful child, you know, after we made the decision to be open to life. We became Catholic, by the way, in 1976. So the first few children were pre-Catholic, and the last few were post-Catholic.
What would you tell someone who is facing that decision? You've done tests. You find that, you know, there is a good chance that a child is going to be born with Down syndrome. What do you tell that woman as a Catholic obstetrician?
Absolutely. I say, look, everybody has a choice in how they handle their personal affairs. And without getting preachy, I would tell them that this is a child of God, and you need to be open to the possibility of raising that child for however long you have them. I try not to put a giant guilt trip, I guess is a the common word to use on the patient. But if I do any preaching, it's like, I always ask patients, by the way, what's your faith base? Okay. If they say they're atheists, well, then I might take a lighter approach. And I do mention, you know, the sanctity of life and that children with Down syndrome, for example, tend to do very well. And they can be very inspirational children. They can be wonderful people. They are wonderful people. They're all children of God. And so you really need to be open to the possibility of bringing that child into life. If they happen to be Catholic, then I give them a rosary and I say, you need to pray about this. you kind of tailor make it to what their faith base is. You know, we live in a world where I work for corporate America, and so I can't be, you know, up on a pedestal, you know, with a rosary at work. But if I have the opportunity, like I said, I always ask them, what's your faith base? And especially if there's a difficult situation, I do, you know, talk about it. And if they're Catholic, I've been known to teach supposed Catholics that didn't know how to play the rosary, find them a rosary and somebody use it. So we have an opportunity as Catholic doctors. We just don't take it because we're so afraid of the consequences of what corporate America might do. I'm in a nice position that I have pretty good skills and I'm in demand. So I guess I can be a little more bold. You know, like I said, I take pride almost in the fact I've been fired from 3 different hospitals because I know I can go work someplace else.
Well, and actually, that was one of my questions. Surely, you know, that wasn't how you always were. You know, you mentioned that you were a convert. And yes. And in an interview last year, you were telling me, you know, no tubal ligations, no contraception. Right. You said you just have to get to a point where you can say no. So right. How do you do that? Tell me a little bit about your journey and what got you from A to B.
Well, like I said, I never would do an abortion, never have, never will. You know, there's a medical term, abortion, which is, you know, not used in the same sense as, you know, secular term. You know, if there's a baby that's not viable, that's already passed, then, you know, we remove the baby because it's dead, basically. But they call those abortions, but, you know, that's a hair splitter. But I've never done any of that. So as far as the tubal ligations, as I said, Dr. Helen Krauss kind of called me out on it, and I started looking at it. In fact, I had made the decision previously when I was in private practice in Indiana. Some of my patients came to me, and they said, Dr. Mackey, how can you be prescribing birth control pills? You're Catholic. This was in the late 90s. So I decided not to do that. And guess what? Nobody would come to me. The hospital, you know, gave me grief, and they said, you have to do that if you're staying here. And unfortunately, I had a longstanding contract that I couldn't get out of, so I succumbed. But then with time, and, you know, like I said, sometimes it's the situation that you're in. But with time, I realized that I just have to be bold. I believe the teachings of the church to be absolutely correct. And so that happened a few years ago, within the last 5 years. And since that point, I have made it very well known. In fact, when I do a job interview, the first thing I talk to them about is I said, you know, I don't do tubal ligations under any circumstances. Is that a deal breaker? And some people said yes, and others said, no, we don't care. In fact, the last interview I had in California, the program director was Jewish and his right-hand man was a Hindu. They said, if you're Catholic, we go with that. It's fine. It seems like the Catholic people have more problem with Catholics doing the right thing than the other faith.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I remember you did say to me, you know, that at some point you had to make a choice, either to quit right. entirely or not, and that God helped you in that decision. Yeah. And you'd mentioned a couple of things, and I was hoping you might share that with us today. Some stories when you'd first committed, and I think it was a tubal ligation. Do you recall that story?
You have to remind me. A lot of water has gone under the bridge here.
I think it was...
Oh, I know what it was. I remember it, sure.
You were praying about
California.
It.
Yeah, I was in California, and basically this was one of the hospitals that eventually fired me. But I was sitting in the room, and the chief came up to me and said, you have a tubal today. I said, but I don't do tubals. He goes, well, you need to find a way to do it. And things have changed a little bit since then, but back then there was a thing you could do called a total self-injection. We took off the total fallopian tube as possible prevention of ovarian cancer. Mm. I checked with the chief guy at the Catholic Bioethics, Dr. John Haas. He goes, nah, it's not a very strong argument. You can't do that. It's not okay. And so I thought, oh, man, here I am stuck. And I said, well, you know, maybe I'll just do that anyways, you know, because maybe there's a 1% to 2% chance we can save a woman from having ovarian cancer. So I'm sitting in the OR waiting for anesthesia to put in the spinal. So I wait, and the guy's like 20 minutes, 30 minutes. I'm praying that he doesn't get it in, by the way, and he doesn't get it in. So now the chief of anesthesia comes in the room like, oh, what's wrong with you? You know, let me show you how to do it. And so he tries for another half an hour, and he can't get it. And I said, well, guys, I'm done. And so I walked out of the room, and the woman did not get her tubal ligation that way.
Well, and, you know, so this is just one of the many challenges that you face, and that'll continue to plague, you know, the field of obstetrics and gynecology, sure. as well as Catholic doctors practicing in that field. And it's not just obstacles for doctors, for patients as well. Sure. I know that there are women who are suffering severe pain during that special time of the month, frequently encouraged sure. to get on the pill right. so that the contraceptive can regulate their cycles, alleviate possible pain from endometriosis. Right. A host of other reasons where they're very quick to encourage women to get on contraception. You know, there are other women that are, you know, getting older or looking to pause or postpone, you know, pregnancy temporarily. And I have to say, I don't think natural family planning are three words that are commonly heard in most obstetric or gynecological offices today.
Right.
What do you tell patients who come to you with these symptoms? I mean, I have a teenager who goes through some very difficult, you know, days during the month. And at 16, the very first thing they wanted her to do was get on the pill, which we did not do. But, sure. you know, what? And then they were saying she, you know, oh, she most likely has an endometriosis. And I'm like, well, you know, they couldn't really conclude that unless they did a laparoscopy. And
right.
they didn't. That was considered invasive. It was considered better to put a girl, even a young girl, on contraception, even though it could cause other issues down the line. What do you advise, you know, these women and parents who are facing that?
Well, there is a growing, but again, a group that's being opposed a lot. There's several different groups. The one that comes most to mind is NAPRO Technology, Creighton Institute. Dr. Hilders has a wonderful program, a fellowship, for doctors to learn how to treat patients without using birth control or those type of things. With endometriosis, you're right. Laparoscopy is the best way to determine it. And if I had a 16-year-old girl and she had that problem, I would offer her a laparoscopy. There always is the risk of surgery, but you know, there are the biggest risk of laparoscopy for a young person is probably the anesthesia part of it.
Hmm.
There are other risks, you know, damage to internal organs, etc. But I think laparoscopy is a very good thing to do to check it out. And then if there is, you know, endometriosis, you can take care of it on the spot. You can get rid of it at surgery. So it's diagnostic, and it's also, if there is endometriosis, you can't treat it on the spot. So I think that is a good alternative. They're now looking at the menstrual cycle as the fifth vital sign. So it can be used for predicting disease, endometriosis, or cancers. And, of course, if you want to use that to regulate not getting pregnant at the given time, or to try to cheat pregnancy, it does all that. So we're going to be doing that, my wife and I both, in June, bringing that to the Melbourne area. And we encourage other doctors to do that. So the thing is, there's always the easy way, and this is what our governing board will, they basically have 90% of the doctors just kind of, marching to what they say is, the standard of care. But they're not looking at what the Catholic standard of care is. There are alternatives that we can do to give our patients relief from pain and not be putting them all on birth control.
I know that natural family planning isn't your area of expertise, but certainly that is an option for families that either need to postpone or delay pregnancy for a variety of reasons.
Right.
Can you tell me a little bit about, I think the common conception of natural family planning is, abstaining and moving around, the calendar.
Sure.
Can you tell me a little bit about what natural family planning is and some of the beneficial aspects to a marriage that practices it?
Well, sure. First of all, it is a two-person thing. It's not just the woman, right? Birth control is just the woman, and then she does whatever she wants. It doesn't include the male. And, a marriage is two people, not one. So basically, natural family planning, they used to talk about the rhythm or the Billings method, and, you have a calendar. And the problem with using those methods is if a woman doesn't have a regular menstrual cycle, she's kind of, using a lot of guesswork. Mm-hmm. Without getting real technical, the way to predict when a woman ovulates is only looking backwards. Mm-hmm. So if she has a 28-day cycle, and that would be a perfect cycle, but they can be a week off, it can be 21 to 35 days. But if she has a 28-day cycle, typically you ovulate 14 days before. Well, if you're lucky enough to have one of those perfect 28-day cycles, you just abstain, let's say, days 12 through 16 or 17, and you're golden, right? Hmm. But if you're one of those people that don't have that perfect cycle, let's say you have a 21-day or a 35-day cycle, then the high likelihood you get pregnant. And I think that's what's caused those programs to be kind of laughed at, like, oh, not very effective. But when you use one of the more advanced, one of the modern programs, whether it be FEM or the Creighton method or the other ones, the thermosymptom ones, you take your temperature. That when you ovulate, progesterone changes, and it has a little bit of a temperature change that you can see on a thermometer. You also look at certain physical changes in the woman. I won't get into the biophysical part of it. But basically, a woman can monitor what her body's doing by a combination of things, by what her body is doing, by using your temperature, and then being able to tell if she is in a fertile phase or not. And if she's in a fertile phase, and they want to have a baby, then they do. And if she's in a non-fertile phase, then you do something else. And something else is not watching pornography or doing other things. It's praying and sanctifying the marriage. And it's a good time for the couple to use a little bit of discipline. It's a little bit of time to call on God to bring the other beautiful benefits of a marriage, other than that most intimate part, the sexual union. You can still be very intimate with a person without having the sexual union. And that's a good time to do that, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. I took a course that a woman was in there that had a child with Down syndrome. And so because it was a big challenge to raise this child, the child was still quite young, they had decided to go the route of natural family planning. And she was very young. And she said that it had actually been such a blessing to them because their marriage had increased in intimacy in ways they had not even considered. Just from conversation to, you know, just embracing one another, holding one another. Just a lot of beautiful things had come out of that. And I think that we live in such a society of, you know, I should be able to have what I want when I want it.
Right.
And the gift of the spirit of self-control has kind of gone out the window.
Sure.
And we forget that, you know, we look at self-control as denial, but really self-control can reap such beautiful gifts, especially in a marriage when it opens up other options for intimacy and for sharing at a different level. And those are the things that are going to get you through in older age, in difficulties with children, and in difficulties in life as we age and the things that we face. So,
yeah, you're exactly right. And we live in an age, let's face it, instant gratification. You know, mm-hmm. we want the instant answer to any question that we can get on the internet or cell phones or whatever. And, you know, we want to be satisfied in so many ways, but it needs to be immediately, fast food and all the rest. I'm not condemning these things, but that's kind of how most people are. I'm that way too. You know, who was in this movie? Oh, let's look it up. You know, there's no more, you know, trying to remember who it was. But what is marriage? What is the sacrament of marriage? It's two people that have made a commitment to basically elevate each of their life states to a point where they can attain heaven as their final goal. We all are supposed to be mindful that our ultimate goal should be to be with God, to be with Jesus as a saint, right? Hmm. So that's what you can work on in the spare time. You can work on your sainthood. And people, oh, that sounds like some corny religious thing, but
well, this has clearly been, you know, a journey for you to get to this point of being able to say no, you know, to certain practices that are considered common in your field. What
right.
can you say to those who want to be OBGYNs and are regarding the honoring their faith through their profession?
Well, this is a little pitch. They should come to a couple Catholic Medical Association meetings where you have doctors that are going through the same thing. And as I said, it's not just OB-GYNs. I get calls from anesthesiologists that are asked to be there, you know, for tubal ligations and abortions and all the rest. And they have a struggle because, let's face it, the hospitals, they control what they want their doctors to do. And not every hospital is a Catholic hospital. Certainly, working at a Catholic institute should be somewhat of a sanctuary. So that is an option. I've been trying to get work at a Catholic hospital. It hasn't worked out yet. But it's just where I'm at, right?
Mm.
But I think anybody that has an inclination to be an obstetrician, they need to know it's very difficult, very long hours, but the rewards are tremendous. And to be a good Catholic obstetrician is even better. It's even better. It's a lot of times they use athletes and the analogy of, you know, life is like being an athlete. You know, if you want to get someplace, you have to go through a lot of sacrifice, a lot of pain. You don't just get to be an Olympic gold medal athlete by doing nothing. You know, you really, really have to work hard. So the same thing applies. If you want to be a doctor, you're going to have to study hard. You're going to have to sacrifice things. And it is a big journey. And to be a Catholic obstetrician, it's even harder, but it's even more worthwhile. So, you know, the prize at the end of the tunnel is even greater if you take the Catholic approach. But certainly, if you want to be an OB-GYN, do it and try to be a Catholic one because it's even more rewarding.
Well, thank you so much. Dr. Mackey will be at the White Mass along with Bishop John Noonan of the Diocese of Orlando, honoring and praying for all those in the healthcare professions, Saturday, February 3rd at 4:30 p.m. at Holy Name of Jesus Catholic Church in Indianola.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
This is Glenda Meekins for FaithFit Radio. Thank you for listening.